My name's Mark Turner. It's not actually on the slide. This is a good start. I just came out of 4 years of Technicolor, and I wrote Technicolor's failed strategy. So we're not going to talk about Technicolor's failed strategy, because that's their business. We're going to talk about what I think everyone else should be doing in this space. And I call it, you know, Post and VFX are going to move to the cloud, and I have a debate with one of the studio's CTOs who's like, oh, I just think it's debatable. And I said, no, it's not. I don't think it's debatable at all. The only question is why and when. And I think the whys, people have been getting the whys wrong, which is why we're going to have this conversation. The when, you can still debate if you want, but I think the whys are wrong. And then I'm going to start just by narrowing the focus down a bit, because it's a big industry and we do lots of different things. So this is the sort of state of migration, if you like, in my world. So there's really multiple different bits of the chain here where we've got our productions and VFX houses, and you can go pre if you want as well. But then we've got our aggregators, the people who are buying all that stuff, and our distributors. This part's done. I'm going to put a check on here. Netflix kind of proves that this bit, check, we can do this in the cloud. And, you know, Netflix runs on AWS, and if no one knew that, then you're in the wrong session. Amazon doesn't, but Netflix does. Go figure that out. But these are the ones that we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about production masters and, you know, the original versions, and we're going to talk about the MES files that are going out to distributors. That's the bit that we're focused on. And this bit especially is the one right now where there are all these little crazy bikes and trucks moving around this town, which is nuts, and really has to stop. So these are the two bits we're going to focus on. We're not going to worry about any of that. Okay? I'm not going to take questions because we won't have time. So there's also the other thing. It wasn't just bikes and trucks. There is some point-to-point file transfers going on this. I also think that's wrong, and we'll talk about that too. The other thing that people frequently don't talk about enough, which is what do you do when something finishes? It's not just about the process. Everybody then goes and archives stuff. So we're also going to talk a bit about this stuff as well, which is what do you do when you're done with the project? And right now, everybody's got their own little siloed version of what an archive is. And frequently, they never match. So, you know, one person's archiving a different version of the same project, someone else is archiving something down the line, and no one really knows if it's the same thing or not. We can't fix everything. Okay, so why will Post move offsite? These are the dull reasons that are, you can look at any industry pretty much and go, okay, this is why people move to the cloud. Right? And they've been true for the last 5 years. Moving CapEx spends to OpEx, being dynamic in your technology so you can match demand with technical capacity, right? That's no, right? No one's going to debate that stuff. That's why the whole world's moving to the cloud. But it's been true in our industry for a while, and it hasn't caused everyone in late 2018 to have moved the cloud. So something else is happening in our space that means that these have not worked. And they're the ones which are like, let's think about that. So these are the ones we're going to talk about, is the less obvious stuff. So one is dynamic staff. And my argument is that dynamic technology resources isn't enough of a reason to move to the cloud, because most of the cost of running VFX or Post is actually people. And we need to move to a dynamic staff model. So we're going to talk about that. Security. There's a lot of people who tell you that the cloud is the enemy. The internet is where all the piracy happens. So how can it be more secure if I put my files on there? That's fundamentally flawed thinking. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about publishing. We're going to talk about archiving. As good reasons to go do it. And then in the last sort of catch-all, I've got some non-linear disruption things you should think about. There's something that might be some random cards that would also trigger some stuff. So we'll get through these one by one. And then move over this side. I found this red template online. It's got lots of red pictures. This is my staff. He's an artist.
Because he has a little
cap.
Yeah, but he's an artist. Okay, so for this, bear with me while we go a bit technology, and then we'll talk about stuff. And I'm a biz dev guy, so I know this is Hollywood IT Society. I'm not going to have a big debate about NATs, and you know, is this the right profile? But, right, just we're simplifying here. So we got our CapEx world and our OpEx world, right? So in our CapEx world, this is our in our facility, we have our camera, we take a bunch of content and we stick it on some storage. So this is what happens today in any post house anywhere and pretty much anywhere in the world. And you have a bunch of people that pull off of that and do their work, whatever it may be, they're pulling off of that stuff, storage. And then especially if we're doing a lot of visual effects, we may have our render farm, which is where we're going to have to go and shove those jobs and process them. And this is the bit where, right now, there's a lot of bursting into the cloud. But as you can, it's very hard to size a render farm correctly. So it's a relatively well-known now processing and burst our compute into the cloud. And certainly TechKai, we did a whole bunch of those in all three of the cloud providers. So we understand that model happens. Now, a lot of these locations are not, there's only one office, and a lot of the work is shared. So we also have a sort of network outreach where we're going to copy the whole thing, we're going to go and do it in another location as well, which may be in a completely different place in the world, but allows us to load balance our work. That's a very frequent thing. And we're using a private network that does that. Okay? And then they're not the only people that we need to sort of share in our project, there's customers. We need to send stuff to them, and then we've also got other people in the world because it's very unlikely to get a Sol's exclusive business anymore, so there's always someone else who's sort of working on some of the same projects that you are at the same time. So this is our world right now, this is pretty much how it does. This bit's secure, because it tends to be in one place, and then whenever you go outside, then you also introduce a chance that you're going to have an insecurity problem, right? So that's where we are today. And everything you'll note is about this. This storage is the key. And if we have storage locally and all the compute happening in cloud and various other people, we have made a fundamentally inefficient system. So what I would argue is that what we have to do first is go camera to cloud and just skip all the stuff in the middle. And once you make that basic leap, everything changes and the economics work. The economics do not work when you're duplicating everything in and out of the cloud, because now I just doubled my chances of it going wrong, and I also doubled the cost of doing everything. So if we go camera to cloud, and I am coming to the staffing thing. I thought I had to go a bit technology first. So once we've gone camera to cloud, then we have a bunch of interesting things. For a start, I don't need a render farm anymore. Don't need it, because I've got almost infinite compute available to me. I can just spin up a render farm, whatever size you want, within a few minutes. And so I, you know, CapEx is gone in this world, right? I can just spend for what I need. And more importantly, everything's coming off my local storage, so now it's actually relatively easy to get to that. Also, my deliveries get a lot easier because my customers are close to me. We're going to come back to that. And we're going to come back to this idea of sharing with other providers, because that's now relatively easy as well. So let's talk about the other bit, which is how do I get dynamic staffing? And that's the virtualized workstations. So this is the bit that no one's really getting to yet, and there's reasons why. But this is the bit that now unlocks the fact where I don't need to have all my staff where my media is, which is inefficient. And my staff right now are in really expensive places in the world. They're in LA and New York and London and Paris. And these are expensive places, much better if I can then spread out my staff and get staff wherever they happen to be. And staff is actually the single biggest issue. You go to VFX providers right now and ask them, why aren't you expanding? Because they can't get the staff. You know, Vancouver is full. If you are an unemployed visual effects artist in Vancouver right now, you're crap. Because there is work coming, there's tax credits and there's work coming. No, I'm not joking. You've got to be really pretty bad to not be employed right now. And that's the issue, is that we can't get enough staff in the right places. And that's because we put the media and expect the staff to come to the media. And that's daft. So if we can get to a virtualized workstation world, then we can actually infinitely scale the number of artists that we can get working on a project. So if we need someone just for an hour, we can get someone for an hour. We need someone for a week or a month, we can pull them in for that amount of time. We can securely provision them. They didn't get the media. I can bring in someone who is working on a project, they can have it for a month, and then they will go. And they didn't get the media. So you don't have to worry about securely provisioning people in and out. We also can now adapt our workstation to the job in hand. as opposed to, you know, once a month, the guy needs a massive GPU and 32 gigs of RAM, but the rest of the time, he's doing email and he's doing a couple of Photoshop tasks. So now we can actually say, all right, we're only going to pay for high-level compute when someone actually needs high-level compute. The rest of the time, we can dumb it down to a much simpler machine. And there is a whole bunch of interesting stuff which you talk about with burstable GPUs and shareable GPUs and some stuff that NVIDIA is doing around that, but let's not get bogged down. And we talked about disparate locations. We are now at the point where you could have staff all over the world, and if there is a really great 3D modeler who happens to live in Africa, great. As long as you get a network to them now you can bring them into your project. And that is how I get back to dynamic staffing. So there's a few things you have to get to first, but we fix the staffing issue by just embracing the cloud. Storage first, that gives us workstations, and now we can be dynamic with our staffing. And now we can get those staff, who are the most expensive part in any of these businesses, onto a variable model that matches your technology. And then we can really start making some savings. Now, there's a whole big debate about whether staff want to be completely contract-based, but I would argue, actually, instead of working for one company, having the ability to sell your wares to 10 different companies is actually a better thing for an artist to be anyway. There is some downsides to this. One, it actually doesn't cost it in just yet. Before people start going, wait a second here, there's problems with virtual. Yes, there is problems with virtualized workstations. If you look at the cost from the big cloud providers right now, it is still worth buying the big machine, because if you charge it per minute, then, you know, and you're going to use it a lot, then it's not worth doing. But there's that. And we still have an issue with bandwidth and streaming sufficient quality. So, you know, it's really hard to do color critical decisions when you're capping the link to 8 bits, right, at 100 megabits a second. That's, you know, a colorist will freak if you gave him that. But the thing about those are, they are, you could draw a line as to when they're going to get fixed. They are fixable issues, and there's a lot of people with a lot of technology working on it. They will be fixed. And at that point, this is all going to change. Okay. That was the first one. Security. This is going to annoy some people. Okay. So let's go back to our simplistic models of everything again. So security. So we take our asset, we shoot it, we send it to our post house. It's probably going to be our core post house. They're going to hold all our files. They're going to do our data. So now we've got our stuff local, but it takes a village. So we have to share our files. And let's say, for simplicity's sake, we've got two visual effects houses and we've got an editor who's offsite that we want to get our files to. So now what we do is we take our media, maybe not all of it, maybe some of it, and we send it out to those people. Instead of having one copy of everything, now we've got four copies of everything, because we've got three external vendors and I've got the original. And you might say, well, that's not insecure, because we're going to encrypt them when we send them to you. That's all right. So we're going to send everybody a key, separate key, so that we're really sure that they've got an encrypted version. But no one can work on an encrypted version. So what do they do when they get there? They go, okay, great, you sent me the key. So I'm going to unlock the file, and I still ended up with unlocked files in all of these locations. And this, and then of course they all send me back, and then I've got to rationalize. You send me that version, and I actually do some of that version, and we go version control issues. So they've done their work, they send it back to me. But this is, and this goes on not in three places, but 10 or 15 places, and then you internationalize it, and you've got to go out to all these different places, and my version of my one file is now 50 versions of the file, or worse, fragments of 50 versions of the file scattered all around the world, potentially. So this is fundamentally insecure, just period. Like, if you were a military contractor and someone showed you this plan, they go, that is stupid. That is insecure. That is bad. It's also slow. These files are huge, and we're sending them backwards and forwards on IP connections that are getting throttled and, you know, blah, blah, blah. It takes hours to send this stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'll tell you a slight sidebar. Technicolor did all the final color on the Netflix show, the monster one, Stranger Things. And would take all these masters, write them to hard drives. It takes hours. These are 4K masters. stick them on a bike, send them 200 yards up the street to Netflix, who would then spend hours copying them back off again, and then days more uploading them to the cloud so they can be distributed. And we just wasted hours. This is days worth of time we could be actually doing creative work. We're just sending the bloody file around and doing I.O. operations. It's ridiculous when you think about it. Anyway, so slow, overly complex, because I've got multiple different variants of multiple fragments of my file, and worse, prone to human error, because there are humans involved in this, and if there's humans involved, people go, oh, well, did I delete that version? Which version did I keep? I think I lost the key. Can you resend me the key? So this is just a bad system. So what would be better? So if we take the basic, my basic premise that you go camera to cloud, then everything just changes. So now you do not move the content. This is the first fundamental. You do not move the content. No one gets a copy of the content. The users go to the content. So I've got the existing people, I want them to work on the file, they need to be work on the file. They come in to my storage and they work on the file. They can all have different permissioned access. I know who they are. I know exactly who within the company has access to my files and what they're able to do with them because I provisioned them all. This is the fundamental, this is a more secure way of just approaching media in general, right? So because then I can do specific users. They are instantly revocable. So the guy leaves the company. There's no chance he takes a hard drive with a media on him. You know, there's no big pissy fit that he has and he'll post a clip on YouTube as he walks out the door. That is not possible in this model because he didn't have the media in the first place. Instantly, off they go. You can also time and location bind them. So, you know, if we've got someone that we, you know, we've got a project that's only between LA and Vancouver. When someone from Russia hits my server, I go, well, they cannot be part of the project. So let's just immediately cut them out. And let's immediately say things like, no one gets access to the dailies files after we've done the final cut. Period. Time bound. No one gets it. Why do you need it? If you need it, you'll come back and request it. We're going to just lock off all those files when I finish my final mezzanine file. Because otherwise, why would you need it? And you can certainly ping me and request it, but you've got to tell me why. And then you've also got the ability, with all our different users, that they can actually be working on different projects simultaneously with different users. So they can go in and have a Disney movie running over here and a Warner Brothers movie running over there because there's no chance of any flowing of content between the two of them because they don't have the content. Okay, so this is a much more secure model than all the human error prone shuffling files around the place, and it's a lot faster and it's a lot more efficient. You're going to ask a question?
Yes.
No questions.
Oh,
yeah. I might give you a good one. Give you one question, and we'll validate whether any questions are good based on your one question.
I just want to make sure this is talking the same model you talked before, right? The same idea.
Yes. Okay. Yes, this is a good question.
So I will permit questions and clarification.
This is just a how the users actually get it. So you go on camera to cloud, we talked about this is the security version of that. I'm going to keep hammering this message until you all agree with me. Okay, publishing. This is the only red publishing thing that I can find. So publishing without moving. This is another one of my basic concepts. Delivery systems are, again, messy and inefficient. So in this case, we've got our OTT service, we've got a pay TV operator, and we've got an exhibitor, just to really mess up with all our windows, right? And we have to deliver our media to them. And every one of them says, well, I need a different version. You know, I'd like it in this packaging format, I've got DCP, or I like this version, I like this version. And all the major studios have got all these departments who are actually charging all these people for all their different deliverables. And again, human error, chances of getting things wrong, metadata mix-ups, time wasted, delay, slow, blah, blah, blah. So, if we've got everything in our cloud, publishing is now a change in bytes. Okay, so if someone's finished the MES file, the difference between a file being processed and a file that's being delivered is I just locked off the overwrites and I'm now given permission to my distribution partners to then access the distribution version. That's publishing in my world. The file did not move. Again, now you're going to ask the question, we'll come to that. But the fundamental concept is publishing is a change in rights, and it's giving access to my distributors to say, come and get it now, it's now ready. And for that, you can send them out an automated message to them that says, your file is ready for pickup. That's publishing in this model, right? Now, each one of my OTT services, they've all got a different delivery format. Now, what I normally do is give them all the MES file. Give them the MES file. They'll do all their transcodes off of it. They'll set up all their variable rating codes, whatever else they need to do to package it up in the way they're expecting. And I've just introduced the same problem we just talked about, which is I've now got multiple versions of my file around, and it's the broadcast master. Like, it's the one you don't want to lose. It's the final version. So why not say to them, all right, I've partitioned out. This is how you will now collect your files. They can't get to anything else. They can only get to distribution masters. And you will come and get them, and I'll give you access to be able to pull them off. Now, much better than that, actually, would be that I introduce some processing on the way. So I don't just say, all right, you can now get permission for the next, you know, they've got a contract with me. It says they have access for 9 months for their window to be able to get the MES file. But what if I actually said to them, why don't you upload to me your variable bitrate encode profiles? I will do all your encoding in your spec, and I'll drop them in a separate section. So it's only, here's a Netflix deliverable, here's the iTunes deliverable, here's the Sky version, the deliverable over there for the UK version. You can all now come in your folders, and they've already been processed for you, and that's part of my service. And some might say, well, you know, that's going to cost me a whole bunch of money. That's going to cost you a lot less money than having a whole bunch of people manually sitting there creating files and getting all the problems wrong. So you give me your profiles, I'll prep your files for you. I'll do your encodes for you, I'll do IMF packaging, whatever it is that you want, and maybe I'll go so far as actually drop it on your CDN and exactly the way you want it. Because I've now got control. Now it's my processes. I know exactly where all my files are because they're my files. Same with our pay TV operators, say they just want IMF packaging for theirs, and I've got to, you know, knock up a DCP for the exhibitors. These windows are not necessarily in the right order. But the point is I'm doing all the work on the same files. So this is my version of publishing without moving. Notice the recurring theme here. We do not move the file. So you can probably guess it. Tied to a specific provider, instantly revocable, time and location bound again, and there's optional file processing I can do. The ideal scenario that, you know, there's a whole bunch of other chats probably going on about blockchains and smart contracts and all this sort of thing. That would be a great way to automate this ability to say, what is it you want? I've got a time and location bound your file. You will not be able to get access to the file after the end of your window. If you pay for this file for this period of time, then the day after, you don't see it anymore. It's gone. And that is an automated part of a smart contract that you wouldn't have to then have people scanning through, you know, separate different text documents. Yes, go on then.
Have you thought about, say, distributors figuring out something is not transcoded correctly, something is not coming over correctly, so all the back and forth?
Yes.
How do you limit it?
Yeah, but a lot easier in that now it's on my side. So they're saying, well, you know, there was an error generated here. Something went wrong in the process. They're flagging it, and I'm going back and fixing it for them. This is the difference between service providers and studios. Right. Most people would say, I've charged you millions of dollars for a product. I will make sure that product is correct and it's the way you like it. That's good customer service. As opposed to, you paid me millions of dollars for a product, I'm going to charge you some more for the version of the file that you said you wanted. And if you've got any problems with it, then, you know, tough crap. So, you know, we don't deal with that. Yeah. Cool, Mickey. Okay, you're going to get the idea of this, so they get easier from here on in. Okay, archiving. We talked about distribution. You could probably guess what archiving is. What's the difference between an archive and a live master? Nothing. Each engine writes. Maybe you push it to a different tier of storage. But actually, my argument would be stuff doesn't move. Stuff does not move. The only difference between something that is in the archive and something that isn't is you change the permissions on it. And you give it a good index so that now it's a library. So now I can go back in and find out what was in there. I can do searches for it. I've got a proxy version maybe so that I always feel like it's current and I don't have to go back and reconstitute the whole file to be able to go back in it, look at it again. But in essence, I just changed the rights. And I said, now it's in the library. That doesn't actually mean that I have any access, any slower access to it. It's still instantly available, it's in the cloud. I've just maybe declared that I'm going to access it less often. So it's still accessible. I'm just going to access it less often. And there's benefits to doing that, and they'll give you, the cloud guys will give you a cost kick for using it less often. The most important thing is I've indexed it, so I know what is in my library now, like a real library. And more importantly, there's also one copy of it. Now, that doesn't mean there's literally only one copy, right? They're duplicated around the world. But the point is, I don't have a copy at the post house, some of a copy in a visual effects house, some of the copy at the broadcast master's place, and you know the tributary's got a copy and everything. There's still one copy, and this is the master archive for everything around the project. The scripts, post notes, you know, all the photos that went with it, the marketing assets with it, they're all in the library that I own, because Mike owns them. And then, therefore, it is also immediately monetizable, and I therefore don't need to have people go back in and say, hey, you want to pull the marketing, the original theatrical trailer for this movie that's 5 years old. Okay, that's easy to do now. I don't have to go back to the trailer provider and say, hey, which version did we do for the French theatrical market? Because they're all in my life. And it didn't move. None of the locations changed, so all the route directions still work. I just access it. Make sense? I told you there was a lot, and we've got like 11 minutes, so I'm not done. So, non-linear disruption. Everything else we just talked about is absolutely predictable and, as I said, inevitable going to happen. These are two examples of stuff that may screw with that model, either in a different way upwards or a different way downwards. So, let's talk about file sizes. And I'm going to make an estimation of this as to what I'm basing it on, right? So I'm basing these numbers on a big render farm that's getting used a lot. So 20,000 cores, and it's being used 80%, right? So most of my visual effects work is still being done in 1080p, and it's because of this render backlog. So if I get a very heavy, largely CG, you know, animated or heavy on CG time, my uncompressed high-def master is 740 megabits a second in bandwidth, uncompressed. And it's taking 20 hours to render each eye per frame, right? These are not numbers I made up. So per frame per eye, so we got, you know, 24 frames a second, and then we're doing 3D, so we got two eyes, so you can add it up. It adds up a lot. So this is the reason why stuff's being done in 1080p. And then there's always a big question, well, I want my visual effects in 4K, because I'm shooting a show in 4K. Okay, fine. So what happens when you do 4K? It does not go up by 4. These are exponentially harder things to go do. They actually go up considerably more, and it's because you're ray tracing, you have to bounce on your... there's more pixels to bounce the light off of. So we do Ultra HD 4K, we're at 2.5 gigabits a second of bandwidth, and it's now taking 100 hours of render time per frame per eye. Now, if you're doing your rendering on preemptible Google machines that you can buy in the cloud, you will find that they cap out your preemption at 24 hours, which is why getting stuff in 20 hours is quite important. You get 23 hours and 59 minutes through a render, and then they cut the machine off for you, you now got a problem. Because now I have to do it four times to really finish my one frame. So, this is a problem. This is much more of a problem. Everybody tells you, hey, we should do visual effects at 8K, you can go, whoa, wait a second. Because if we do that, for a start, we're shoving 10 gigabits a second of bandwidth uncompressed around our facility, and we're now up to 400 render hours per eye, per frame. Okay, this is not the nonlinear disruption. This is actually linear disruption. It's uncomfortable, but it is. This is not the stuff that would widely change our world and be completely unpredictable. That's these things. What happens if we do light fields? That's the nonlinear. That's the like, oh shit moment. Because light fields, we're 180 gigabits a second, we got 96 cameras to process, and we're not just processing the light and the color for every pixel, we're calculating the angle of light for every pixel. And that's a nonlinear disruption. There's no local render farms at that point, right? That's like now I need the whole cloud to be able to process my game. I'm not saying that there isn't light field compression, there is, that people are working on it, and blah, 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 blah. But this is the sort of thing that we cannot predict, that if the industry starts going, well, it'd be really awesome if we had light fields for all our content, and it came up yesterday with CTA, as people go, it's going to happen. Well, this is what we have to deal with if it happens. So that's on the sort of the bad side, if you like. That, oh my God, we have so much data to process, we've got to really rethink things. There is another technology coming that would help, hopefully help. And that's real-time ray tracing on GPUs. And this is an actual image from the NVIDIA RTX launch that is a real-time ray traced image, you know, with all the reflections and this is all being run in real time. Now, there's still people that tell you, well, I don't do, you know, I like to do my stuff on a CPU farm because I've got a CPU farm. Well, we may still be 12, 18 months out from going from gaming real time ray tracing to visual effects real time ray tracing, but I'm willing to bet there's a whole bunch of productions that will go, I'm good with that. I'm good with that. You're telling me that's real time, I'm taking that now. And certainly the movies will get to the point where this is so much more cost effective, and they go, we'll be there in 18, 24 months. So let's talk about what would happen if that world changes. And for that, we have to get back to a little bit of a workflow thing right now. So we have our artists working on our digital character, whatever he's doing, in Maya or something, building a scene. And he wants to see what that's going to look like so he can get approval from the director or his manager. So what he'll do is, he'll submit his job to the CPU-based render farm, wherever it is, and he'll go home. Go home, have dinner, kiss the kids, go to bed, get up in the morning, come back, 12 hours have passed, he can sit down with his manager and go, this is what I did yesterday. Manager gives him a bunch of notes, he can change it, and he then takes those revisions and starts working again. Same thing happens next day, blah, blah, blah. Right? We suddenly build up our movie over several weeks and months. So what happens if we switch to a GPU-based workflow? And I'm not saying whether these are local or in the cloud. It doesn't matter at this point. But the point is, we're using a game engine or something that's giving me real-time ability to place objects in a scene, move the lighting in a scene, change the depth of field, and see what they really look like. Then I can do real-time iterations and approvals with my boss. He comes in and says, I don't like that, you know, the plants in the background too far away, bring them all forward, I can change the scene, I can change the lighting, lighting director comes in, signs off on it. Now, we may, at this point, only be running at 90% precision. But I'm looking at real-time rays. I can be very confident that the final render is going to look like that. Everyone signs off on it. We're working in real-time, like people do in the real world. And then I've got my entire movie cut. Everyone's decided this is what it's going to look like. Then I hit render. And then I might spin up a CPU-based render farm and I'll run an offline render. But at that point, instead of doing it every day and needing this thing running every night, I only need it for my final deliverable at the very end. So at that point, there's no point in having a local CPU render farm at all. I would just buy one from the cloud because I only need it once every 9 months when I finish a project. But everybody signed off on what it looks like, so we're all confident that we know what the final render looks like. And it can take a light field and take 2 weeks because we're all signed off on what we think it's going to look like. So this is on the sort of, the light fields are like, this is like, oh, actually, that could help a lot. And I'm not saying which one comes first or whatever, but there's a lot of interesting things to track in this and how it, as long as you're open to changing the way things work. Then we have this. Blah, blah, blah. Final scenes rendered just once. So, it's not bad, 5 minutes of questions. This is so. This is what a recap. Tell them what you told them. These were the dough. These are the ones that we just talked about, which is the stuff that you need to have been understanding the economics of the business to actually get the facts. And this is, you know, I spent some time with how people trying to get them to understand. This is great, guys, but this is not what moves this our industry. This is the sort of stuff you need to understand. This is what moves our industry. And talking this sort of language, and then we're all going to make progress, and we'll all make this faster and cheaper and better. Question at the back.
Previous slide.
Previous slide.
In the theme of data doesn't move.
Ah.
GPU's got to be in the workstation, in the cloud.
Huh?
The bandwidth issue, do 90% ray traced enough quality to the workstation in the field if it's grading or if it's not grading? How far are we away from that?
Oh, you see, that's not fair, is it? So there's a reason why Google built a data center in LA, right? And that's it, which is the workstations. You've got to get the latency has got to be sub 9 milliseconds. And that, you know, it's just a speed of light issue. And they've put GPUs in it. So the storage needs to be close, but not that close. And there's a whole bunch of people aren't thinking about this in the right way. So if you purely just look at an artist, say they're using a Wacom tablet, because the absolute worst case scenario is a Wacom tablet, they draw a line and they expect to see it on the screen, but the GPU is remote, and so the data. So people go, well, I've got to accelerate the link speed so that when they touch this thing and they draw it that way, then I can get those pixels back as fast as possible and they've been processed. But a bit of AI will tell you, if someone starts drawing here and they're heading in this direction at this speed, you can actually predict what the frame is going to look like before it arrives, right? You can actually get several frames ahead and go, you know, at the point they start slowing down, then I can start saying, well, wait a second, they might stop soon. But these computers are running faster than your hand is running. So there is a bunch of stuff you can do to accelerate light. It's not, right, physics major will tell you that's not true, but it is. On the basis that you apply a bit of AI, and you can actually start predicting what people are going to do. So you want a number? 3 years. 3 years to the point that the economics work, the bandwidth we fix, and people say, I'm going to build a facility and I'm going to put screens and mice in, and that's it.
I say 18 months.
I hear it 18 months. I'm willing to take this. Yeah.
So do the cloud providers have these GPU ready virtual machines?
The GPU ones they do, the new NVIDIA card, this is benefiting the cloud guys, is they go out and spend all the money on getting new GPUs every 18 months. So the RTX cards is the race for who can get the new NVIDIA Pro RTX card, which will do the real-time ray tracing. Which, by the way, have a little AI chip in them as well. I don't know if you saw the announcements, but they have AI in there as well. That's one of the ways that they're actually managing to do this, is because they're doing some tricks with AI. Any other questions? I know lunch is harboring.
This is Windows only, I assume.
I didn't see that. Did you see any
on the virtual machine side, on the actual workhorse.
You can take that up with them. Everyone. Some people will. There's one next year that will tell you Windows is the best way to go because they don't have to pay a license fee for a Windows machine.
Yeah, but unfortunately, in the real world, there's some artists that are not willing to work anything but their Mac.
Right.
So,
Linux. Yeah, there's no Macs in the cloud, so yes, those artists are going to have a problem with this one. Yes, or Apple's going to have to start getting flexible with their licensing terms. Neither of those I can fix.
Sorry, I just wanted to say I'm here from Google, so if you want to talk about virtual workstations with Google, then
yeah. They're all going to hit you up by that when you walk in the door. I know where they are in the room.
Well, you're interested. We built this already.
Who are you?
DXE.
Okay, so there's someone else that can do the streaming desktops.
Okay.
See, this is the right room to be in. Okay, so this presentation will be online. If anybody wants to talk, we can talk more over lunch. But this is lunchtime.